Welcome back to another episode of The Textual Talk. I'm your host, HD. And today we're diving into the intriguing journey of our guest, Vinod Akinuri, the founder and CEO of Jumpstart the Tech. Vinod's remarkable career in tech education spans from teaching diverse groups, including veterans and underserved students, to navigating the realms of EdTech and GovTech. In this episode, we explore Vinod's pathway influenced heavily by his Indian heritage and passion ignited through high school coding classes. We discuss cultural pressures, the reality of tech certifications, and what truly makes a career in STEM fulfilling. Tune in as we share insights on balancing passion with financial stability, the importance of building supportive networks, and the nuances of transitioning between government and educational tech sectors. Vinod will also provide valuable strategies for aspiring tech professionals, emphasizing personalized career roadmaps and the power of genuine connections. Whether you're stepping into tech or looking to pivot within the industry, this episode offers a deep dive into the essentials of career success, resilience, and the pursuit of happiness in the tech world. So let's get started and stay textual. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast, where I'm your host, HD, and we got another banger ready for you guys today. We have a guest, Vinod Akinuri, and he is in tech as well as helping people get into tech as well. But before we get into the nitty gritty, you know what to do. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review or follow us to help us out in the podcast rankings and analytics. And if you're watching us on YouTube right now, like, subscribe, hit the bell icon to be notified when we're dropping all content. And if you're still right here in the beginning, join the Patreon, support the channel. We got a lot of big things that may be on the way and your support will go a long way. But Vinod, what's going on, man?
Hey, Henry, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. We were just talking earlier how we met was very organic. It was very, very, like, natural, you know? Like, I saw you on Apple Podcasts, reached out to you, and, like, you know, want to get on your podcast. First and foremost, I support everything you do for the community. I tell people all the time, I like to be around people like you because you're all about, you know, wanting to help others, want to help bring the community of tech to a brighter and better place. So thank you for having me on your show.
No problem, man. How about you go ahead and introduce yourself for the audience?
Yes, everyone. So my name is Vinod Akinuri. I'm the founder and CEO of Jumpstart to Tech. I started out my career very different. So this is why I start about me is because I started off my career in college. I was teaching adults, veterans, and students on how to get started in tech. I transitioned into EdTech after college, teaching computer science to underserved kids in Baltimore. And then I got into GovTech. Now, just recently, I'm transitioning back into EdTech. And throughout all those experiences, I started the company Jumpstart to Tech. And, you know, we develop personalized step-by-step roadmaps to help jumpstart individual careers in tech. So I'm really looking forward to the enriching conversations that we're going to have on this podcast.
So I know that was the short version. Let's talk about, I guess let's talk about the long version. Let's talk about college, early career, and kind of what you did to start your tech career.
Yeah. So in college, so first and foremost, I was already forced to be a tech in seventh grade. When you come from an Indian background, it's like kind of already instilled in you, like, hey, when you grow up, it's either a STEM field. So I was already like told, like, you're doing tech, you're not doing anything else. But honestly, though, my parents didn't really force me. I always had an interest in tech. Like, some of my favorite people were like Steve Jobs. I love Steve Jobs. Like, I was very fascinated with iPhones, iPods. I had all the new gadgets. And, you know, through that, I started coding in 10th grade. I was making websites, and I was really, really good at Python. And then through then, I actually started off Towson University my freshman year. It was a graphic design major, and be honest, I really didn't like it. So my second semester of my freshman year, I transitioned into IT. And, you know, throughout my 4 years, the one thing that I missed out is I felt lost, right? You're put in a four-year degree plan, but nobody really knows how to get started in a tech career. Nobody really knows what is that actual plan for you to move forward in your career. And that's why I decided that, hey, well, after I graduate, I'm gonna figure that out. And I only figured it out after I landed my first full-time job at the Seed School in Maryland. I was a computer science teacher, and you know, within there, I was teaching computer science, but I also teaching CompTIA certifications to high schooler students in underserved communities. So I was teaching CompTIA certifications, but I also realized there was a really, really big pinpoint. Those students, once they get the certifications, what else is there for them? Are they gonna find a career in their tech career? Because at the end of the day, I realized those certifications by itself won't get you a job. So after all of those insights and stuff, that's when I like formulated everything into Jumpstart to Tech. And that's why I want to really help people figure out what they want to do in their tech career and provide those personalized career roadmaps. After my time at the C-School, I transitioned to GovTech. I was a program analyst, and then I was doing project management work. Recently, now transitioned outside of GovTech and going back into EdTech to follow my passions of building programs for students and building curriculum pathways and seeing what that would look like. So it's my career really been a journey, man. I went back and forth, but I tell you one thing, like teaching was the one thing that really helped, you know, create those opportunities for me.
That's cool, man. So I actually want to ask you an important question. It's one of the first things you said. You said, coming from an Indian background, you knew that you pretty much were going to go into a STEM field. About what age were you when they pretty much told you that?
I was 14. My dad was already in the STEM field. My dad, like, he does stuff with computers and stuff. And it wasn't really my parents that, like, kind of instilled in me. It was more my cousins who were older than me who were in college. Like, man, if you ain't doing tech, I don't know what to tell you. And then that kind of, like, grew on me. And then, you know, that's when I was like, okay, I made a decision. Okay, I'm going to go into a STEM field.
Okay. No, that's cool. And this is going to be a different conversation one day. One of my Instagram friends, he had this chart that he posted. It was pretty much like median earnings based on race or whatever. And of course, African-Americans were one of the lowest. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting was his comment on it. He was saying, look at where everybody else ranks is and then look at us and look at, like, we focus on sports versus they focus on, like, you know, STEM and other type of things. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what that made me think about, is the drastic difference in mindsets. Like, I found out about IT and stuff, not really by accident, but just really not knowing much about it. Like, I went to school initially just wanted to be an architect. So to get to school and say, oh, okay, I can do computer information systems and I can make a good living for myself. Like, I think, of course, it helped me. I think everything worked out as supposed to. But, like, I have, just like you said, I have younger siblings now. I have people that watch this show. And a lot of times, like, they're seeing me say, hey, as early as possible, you need to learn this stuff. So now you see a little bit more of, they got, like, kids that are coding and all these different little boot camps that are related to STEM, because you have... You know, you have some kids that's in their teenagers. It's probably like hacking into stuff, that's getting jobs, that's not even going to school. So that's definitely pretty cool. So I remember you told me your age, which you're still, you know, I would call you like a whippersnapper, as the older people would say, fairly young. I remember when
But you seem fairly young too. How old are you? Ask on the podcast. You see, you're around my age. Like, I'm 24. We're like 7 years apart. So it's nothing crazy.
No, I mean, it depends though. Like I said, I've been, next year, make 11 years I've been in corporate. So it's like all those years feel like they not age me, but I feel like I'm older than what I am. Cause I finished college at 21. And so I was in corporate at 21, turned 22 in corporate. So while I was working in corporate, I had friends that were still in college. So it always made me feel like I was older than them, even though I wasn't. I just started my career before they did. But let's talk about that. So let's talk about, like, your first real job. How was that adjustment for you?
Yeah. So like I said, that C-School of Maryland position that I got, it was a big adjustment for me, man. I really didn't expect me to be teaching at a school system, you know, like that's really not like one of those career paths you decide to do after you get out of college. Like, my parents told me either corporate or government. Like, is you're not gonna be going into like teaching. And they actually didn't want me to go into teaching because they felt as though no money would be made for me. And I realized then and there, like, I would listen to all that external noise from everyone, and then I had to block all that out and tell myself, all right, I'm gonna do it. What's the worst gonna happen? If I don't like the job, I'm a dip. So I got into the job, and it was one of the greatest experiences. Like, you never know how much you should be grateful for when you look at other people and be like, damn, I need to be more grateful, you know? Because, you know, when we're talking about the student population, we're talking about students that come from backgrounds where, you know, it's not the best, you know, they're not living in the best conditions. They don't even have Wi-Fi to work at home, you know? So being blessed to have like just little things like that in life is just like so, so meaningful. And I realized that from then and there that my main purpose in life is really to just help others out. Like, I love serving people, and I just want to see people in a better position. And I really got to, you know, commend my father for that, because he's really big on like philanthropy work. And he does a lot of things. I would like has a nonprofit in India as well. So it's like, I noticed by my time at C school, it was more about like helping those students and getting them certified. And I noticed something: the more I help people out, the more opportunities I got. Like, I was getting opportunities out the one. Like, the more opportunities I got, like, I tell you, like, I was teaching full time, right? Landed a 30K contract for a 3-month teaching position at FAMU just because of the impact I was doing at that school. Like, people say there's no money to be made in teaching, but all in all, I probably made around six figures that year, even though my full time job was under six figures because of all that 1099 work I was doing. You know, taxes and all. So, you know, they gotta take their taxes away. But, you know, I did that, and you know, it was just a really great experience. And like I tell people all the time, HD, like, you gotta have the right people in your circle. The right people gonna push you. You know what I mean? Like, I had a really, really good supervisor, Andrew Pham. Really good dude. He's actually helping me now with some stuff. But it's like, I tell people all the time, like, don't worry about being perfect. I think everybody wants to like build a self-image about themselves. Like, hey, you got to be this person on LinkedIn, bro. Show your true colors. You know, show your adversary. You know, show like some of the mental toughness that you are going through. Like, I'm not talking about posting sad stories on LinkedIn to try to get a job, but I'm talking about like just be real with yourself. You know, at the end of the day, I feel as though people don't get to see their true colors because social media, it represents an image of that you have to be very, very happy all the time. You gotta post all the positive stuff. You know, as humans, we gotta you know consider our emotions and really act on it. So I really enjoy my time at my first job.
Yeah, man, that's some real stuff right there, man. Like we were talking about earlier about, you know, you were saying, well, you know, you were pretty much like down to earth and responding to me. Like I said, I've had that happen plenty of times, but I just don't take my position for granted. Mm-hmm. And like you said, based on where I'm from, I know kids that don't have Wi-Fi or don't have computers or have never traveled to certain parts of town. I know all these things. And so it's one of the things that I'm one of the few people that, hey, if there are things I don't like going on in the industry or deceptive things or things where people are targeting people that look like me mostly, mm-hmm. I do speak out of it, about it, because regardless of what people feel, that dollar you earn is hard. I just mm-hmm. told someone today in the consultation, like, hey, I don't take for granted when y'all book for me. I book with me. You didn't have to book with me. I respect your money. I respect you worked for this money to pay for a service from me and get a value from me. So I respect that. I know how hard it is. You know, I'm not just this person like, oh, look at me. I got a tech job. I make a lot of money and you're a peon because you do regular stuff. We're all the same. So definitely agree with you on that right there. But some people could use the lesson of humility. They don't understand. Yeah. They think, and granted, you can say it's like younger kids sometimes based on how their upbringing is, they wouldn't know that, hey, what you have, you're lucky. I can't say, it's hard to say you're lucky, but I'll put it like this, like, you know, everybody doesn't have what you have. You know, mm-hmm. you should be happy you have
parents that, you know, that care about you in the way they do, or parents mm-hmm. that make sure they try to put you in the best position to succeed in mm-hmm. life.
No, I was saying, like, that's the one thing I tell people all the time. If you have parents that are loving and really care about you, please cherish them and love them. I know this is kind of off topic from tech.
No, you good.
Because, like, I really think we got to talk about some real stuff here. You know, I feel as though some people, like, when people are nice and when people are loving, some people like to take advantage of that, right? Oh, because he's this way, I'm about to start acting like a douchebag. I'm going to start acting like somebody who doesn't really care, because that person is automatically going to be nice. But you got to be willing to really, like, really acknowledge. Like, bro, I tell people all the time, like, I tell my brothers, I love you, man. Like it's just as simple as I love you, because at the end of the day, love can go so far, and it's just like I tell my boys, I tell my mentors all the time, be appreciative of the people you have in your circle. At the end of the day, the people you have in your circle, those are the people who are they say, forgot the quote, you are the percentage of the top five people in your circle. Something like that. But like just I tell people all the time, just be appreciative and thankful of people. Cause I know one thing and why I am able to connect with people is I always ask people, how can I serve value to you before you serve value to me? Like, how can I help you out before you help me out? And that's just the way I move, you know? So, you know, I tell people all the time, like, add value to people's lives, and, you know, just be appreciative of the great people you have in your circle, because there's not a lot of people that are just real and genuine and solid. So, you know, if you come around people like that who are just very genuine and solid, make sure you know to keep them around you.
Yeah, man, I agree. And while you were talking, it just made me think about one of my intro calls I had earlier today mm-hmm. about another woman who's been watching my content for a while and just really pouring into me in the sense of like saying, like, I'm going to connect you with these people. So, we got all these different things going on, and I believe, like, you'll be a good fit for this or this. And it's tying into what you talked about, like, the more you were given, what you were getting back. That's kind of what I've always felt. Like, there's sometimes I probably don't charge somebody for something. I'm paying mm-hmm. maybe their situation, whatever. I'm like, yo, just whatever. Or whatever I'm doing, like, all this, you know, information that I've given out, you know, for free that, you know, people could, you know, charge thousands, tens of thousands of dollars for. So I've always looked at that as, like, I'm not too concerned about, kind of like right now, it's like everything I do is going to eventually come back to me when it's time for it to come back to me. And then when it comes, it always comes in a multiple of more than what you eventually put in. And so, like you said, like, trying to be a useful person, like, even if I'm reaching out to somebody networking, I'm saying, you know, hey, let me know if it's something you need, you know, if you ever need me for something, reach out to me. Because I don't want this thing to be one way. Let's make it two ways. I think that's all
awesome
issue that we run into when it comes to LinkedIn and social media, or people reach out to me all the time. And I say it's like on every podcast, but I was like, you know, I'm not going to mentor a person I don't know. You got to kind of build that up. You have to
build that relationship, you know? I tell people all the time, HD, like, it's way more than money for me, man. I tell people all the time, I only charge you because you're going to take it serious if I charge you the money. If I give it to you for free, you're not going to take it serious. And I tell people all the time, at the end of the day, money is just numbers. Like, they're printing money every day. You know what I mean? So money is just really a number. Like, it's not the money is why I'm doing this. I just want you to, like, be able to take it serious. And I tell people all the time, at the end of the day, like, even with or without the money, I'm still going to be delivering community. Like, but at the end of the day, we unfortunately live in a system where, like money is what drives the economy, drives our basic needs. So I, you know, sometimes I am going to have to charge, but it's not because I want to break your pockets. And I tell people all the time, HD, like, I'll tell you one thing. I had a girl willing to pay over $1,000 for what I have. I said, you know what? I don't want you to spend that much money. I'm going to give you my standard plan for the price it is. We're going to make sure that you have a self-development budget. Make sure that you have money to fund your certifications. Take the 497 plan and then use that money. I could have simply told her, hey, take my premium plan, talked her into getting the premium plan, had to pay $1,000. then had to pay an extra $1,000 for certifications. But like, what would that would make me? That would make me feel guilty for doing that. You know what I mean? That's when I say it's never about the money. I let people know that all the time. Like, I always everything I do in my business is built on ethical and integrity. Like, I don't do anything that would. I always make sure you get the best option available, the best thing available, so you're set for your success in your future. Because I'm just like you, AG. Like, I understand that money is like something like that dollar value holds a lot of weight, man. It's like, and it's like it you got to work for that, you know? So it's like, you got to be willing to like, you got to like, I understand the struggles that people have to go through. And that's why I'm like, I'm fortunate and blessed as well, you know? So I let people know, look, I understand your struggles, but hey, look, I'm here to like, let you know that I understand your struggles. But if you was to pay for my service, you would take it more serious. But yeah, that's also why everything is under 1K for me. That's just my services. Like, yeah, that's 1% of what a college degree would charge you. So I agree with what you were saying.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I really don't care about what people charge. Not in a funny way. I'm just like, you know, if it gets results, it gets results. Because, you know, as you'll see this as well, as you grow and get bigger and as your time allotment is smaller, your prices probably will change because time is the one thing we can't get back. So that's a lot of times the reason why people have to pay a premium, because you're paying for somebody's time, expertise, maybe what they got to do with payroll, all this other stuff that you have to do. Mm-hmm. But that's also why I actually prefer people to do consults with me first. Unless we talk behind the scenes first and I know exactly what you need, I do that. Like, even the consults, there are times I could upcharge somebody. But I say, you know what? You have no skills right now. I need you to go do this, this, and this.
X, Y, Z. Then come back to me.
Right. Then come back to me if what you did doesn't work. Because I was like, I've told them all the time, I can make your resume look better now, but I don't have nothing to put on it.
And let me add one more thing. I can do all that for you, but if you're not willing to put in the work, it's not much I can do for you. Like, and that's the thing. That's the thing I kept telling you like earlier, like before this call, is that people expect for you to like to give them the resources and then guarantee something on top of that as well. And I let people know all the time is nothing is ever guaranteed, but don't expect that for somebody to give you something and then you don't get it back in return, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You only get what you put in. Now, shifting focus real quick so we can educate them on some stuff before we kind of go into like the real life. So career coaches, you said you were a program analyst, correct?
Yes, sir.
Can you explain to them? Because I've had people on here that are product managers and program managers. What is a program analyst and what do they do?
Yeah. So when I was a program analyst, so program analyst is a branch underneath the program manager. So program analyst is that entry level position to get your foot into an IT management and strategy domain. So IT management is a domain in IT where you oversee your team on projects, for high level projects. And within IT management, there's a program analyst tech role. Program analyst is the entry-level position. The mid-level position is program manager. And then, you know, you got your high-level position, which is the senior program manager. And then same thing with project manager. You got the junior project manager, and senior project manager. So within the program analyst, the programs and projects kind of go multi-hand-to-hand. But with programs, you're just more like dealing with programs. And like, you know, when I was in my role, I was working with Excel sheets and I was working with I can't go too much in deep because it was a government contract position. But let's just say I was doing stuff that was more like not technical, but it was more of a like gathering databases, meeting with your teams, discussing how the project is going. But, you know, when you want to differentiate from programs, from projects, think of it as like a triangle. Projects is on the top. Under projects is programs. But it also can go hand to hand. There can also be programs at the top, and underneath the program domain is projects. So, like I said, it's just more about like meeting up with your team and, you know, just making sure that you guys deliver the results you're supposed to deliver.
Perfect, man. Perfect. So with being a program analyst, okay, how does somebody become a program analyst? Because a lot of times you probably experienced this, I've experienced this. I want to be a program manager. I want to be a product manager. But how does somebody become a program analyst? Like, what do they need to know?
Yes.
Type of certifications they may need.
Yeah, yeah. So with me, I got into it when I was in the role. I got into it because, bro, my connections. Like, I was up connecting with people and I was networking with people. But in order to really get into those type of roles, like you said, HD, you got to build a foundation. You can't expect to get a PMP when you're just starting out. Like, you literally have zero experience for you to get a PMP. So I tell people all the time, to want to get into those roles, you need to start off with those foundational certs. You know, Google Suite have different certifications. We got the Google Cybersecurity. You know what I'm talking about, the Google Data Analytics. But there's also one called Google Project Management. Start off with that certification. That certification is the basic foundation certification you need. And that certification would actually complement with programs as well. So get the Google Project Management. Understand the different, you know, specificities within a Google Project Management certification. Once you get that Google Project Management certification, complement that with entry-level projects. So start doing some projects on the side that will help you. Once you start getting that work experience, which is those projects, then you apply for entry-level positions, you know, showcasing the projects that you've done, showcasing the search that you got. And then once you do that, you spend at least 2 years, you know, 1 to 2 years within the role, depending on your contractor. And I've seen your other podcasts where, you know, contractors, they get laid off, you know, so make sure to at least try to stick for a year within a contract position. And if you only are there for a year, I tell people all the time, maybe I'm wrong for this, but if you're just starting off, you're early grad and you got 1 year of program analyst experience and that's all you have, you're technically still an entry level, because at the end of the day, you should at least get two to three years of experience of entry level. At the end of the day, that's still an early grad. You know what I mean? You're still a recent early grad. So I tell people at least like 2 to 3 years as a program analyst. Then you know, within your years of being in that position, try to aim to get your PMP. Like I said, PMP, it's different, meaning that there's some people who can just go get their PMP, then there's some people who need to build a foundation to get that PMP. So you will get your CAPM, which is a Certified Associate of Project Management. Once you get that certification, then you can get your PMP. But if you feel confident to get your PMP, you get your PMP. Then when you get your PMP, you transition into a mid-level role, and then you just repeat the process over and over again. Of course, none of this is also linear as well. Like, your career path is going to be like that, but I'm trying to give it in a more linear way as possible.
No, that's perfect. So you said the magic word PMP. Nah, so I don't know how much you watched my content, but a while back I covered this woman on Twitter saying, hey, she has a PMP plug that can get you a fake PMP. And she was showing the fake PMPs.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I promise you. I can go find the post in a second. I can share it with you. But what do you feel about fake PMPs? And
sorry, I'm just laughing because that's kind of funny to me. A fake PMP?
Yeah, that same person was showing people how to make fake degrees on Canva. It's the whole. It's like Twitter is a wild place.
Fake PMP. First and foremost, that is very unethical. Second of all, if you got to fake anything, then don't do it at all. I tell people at all the time, like take a more ethical approach to your tech career. Of course, there are people who lie on their resumes. Like, I actually know someone who like put Tesla, Microsoft and Google on their resume. They had no experience in tech and they were able to land a job with that. But then you got to realize at some point those things actually catch up to you. And at some point you're gonna be dealing with red tape. You know, you don't want to deal with red tape. Then go downhill afterwards. So I would say that whole fake PNP stuff, that's definitely like, that's not ethical at all. And whoever is doing it should definitely stop, because at one point they may actually get caught and they may actually get sued by the people who actually does the real PNP. So probably not the right thing to do.
Yeah, and funny enough, like after like we had a discourse about the PNP, it was this guy on LinkedIn hit me up, and I had made a post about saying like the fake PNP plug hit me up. So yeah, I made a video on it though. I gotta go. Like I had to actually find the pictures and stuff that they posted, unless they blocked me or they don't. I haven't seen them on TikTok or my Twitter in a long time. So
oh, they blocked you?
I don't know. Well, no, they were following me. They were following like a lot of people else in the career tech space, and I had told them, I said, "Hey, I don't really agree with your methods, but I'd love to have you on the show because I'm a person to where I don't want everybody that comes on here to disagree with me. Like I don't mind a disagreement as long as like we keep it, you know, respectful. So I don't mind it. So I've always welcomed people with different opinions to come on. I think it makes for good banter. Now, you were telling us that you are, first of all, your experience working in GovTech, you know, that's a buzzword because, well, most people see it as like recession proof. Most people see it as pretty much jobs you can't get fired from. Which, yeah, I agree with that. I think the world of more government jobs for sure, like, you know, you could just stay in them forever. But what was your experience like working in GovTech?
Yeah, so my experience was really good. I had a good 1 year experience. Like I said, I recently transitioning back into ed tech. So I had a really good experience. You know, my contract, it came to an end, but it was a really good experience while I was there. Like I said, when you're a government contractor, it's a different ballgame than when you're actually an employee with the government. So within my time at GovTech, it was really good. I will say, did it really satisfy me? I'm gonna say that for a couple of reasons. I was working remote. I was being able to go within the United States to work remote. I've been able to do a lot of things while working there. But I know one thing that also contributed to it. It didn't really fulfill me, you know what I mean? It just didn't bring me the purpose that I really wanted. You know, it didn't serve my happiness. But for people who want to get into GovTech and want to find a job that will pay them a good money, you know, as a contract, you get paid really good money. So find you a contract job. It's really, really good. And on top of that, you also get to work with people all different ages. Meaning that government people are more like older people, but then you got like some younger people and some, you know, people who are not old and who are not young as well. So it give you that experience working with a different crowd as well. So all in all, it's a good experience, but just know like one thing that you would want to get is your clearance. I have a secret clearance, but I tell people all the time, like what, like great thing about these GovTech jobs is like contracting positions. They'll actually sponsor your clearance if they feel as though you're good enough to actually do the job. So they'll actually sponsor your clearance as well. So making sure that you accept, making sure that you know that as well, because most of these government jobs, you need a clearance.
I forgot I muted it there. But yeah, I got my first clearance working for Apex on the TSA help desk. So I definitely agree. And it was people from, well, with us, it was different. It was a new location. And we had different teams of people that were getting more. I worked with a lot of previous military in that role. But for us that were in the military, of course, it took a minute to get our clearance. We had interim clearances. Then finally the clearance went through. And, you know, honestly, I think I had a secret. I didn't have a top secret. So they didn't have to go interview anybody based on my answers and my equip, which was good. But I was like, filling out the equip was so crazy because it was like, I don't even remember some of the stuff. I think it was like, where's the house you stayed in at 10 years ago? Who's your best friend? And all this other.
Bro, they were asking me questions. But like, lucky I got it when I was in college. So I didn't really have that much experience to backtrack it.
Me either.
So that was always good too.
Yeah, that's why I tell people, I say, typically I say sometimes it's easier to get it when you're younger because you don't have like a lot of things in your name and all this other stuff. And it typically comes faster. Yeah. Like I know one time, what was it, 2015, I think, when OPM got hacked. Mm-hmm. So they was like putting a hold on getting clearances and stuff. It was like, it was a whole mess. That's a story for another day about.
May I ask you, how many jobs did you transition from as well? I know this podcast is more about, you know, what I did, and I want to also know more about you and like where you came from as well. So if you could just give me a brief thing about, I did a senior your LinkedIn profile and stuff, but I want to just know more about you. I know you're a cybersecurity coach, but what do you also do full time?
Full time, I do incident response.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Go ahead. No. What I was saying is like, so you do incident response full time. That's what you do full time as well. Yeah. Because right now I'm studying for my C-Risk certification. I'm not sure if you know. CRISC. That's what I'm studying full time. I mean, that's what I'm doing and studying full time. So no, the reason I asked you that is because I feel as though one thing a lot of people need to do is like managing their time. I tell people all the time, especially with contracts and stuff, when you're getting these government contracts and stuff, they're actually more acceptable for you to run your own business on the side because it is a contracting company. So I tell people all the time, if you want to be a person who's a tech entrepreneur, you have a more higher chance of doing it when you're a contractor because you're a contractor. They'll let you go on at any time. So mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, like, you need to make sure that if you want to do your side gigs, you can do your side gigs. I know a lot of people who work for the actual government, I don't see none of them on LinkedIn. Like, they're like hidden on LinkedIn. Like, you would never find them on LinkedIn. So as a contractor, you know, there's a lot of stipulations you don't have to follow because you are a contractor.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, for me, I just tell people to do what's in their best interest because the company will. So that's kind of how.
Yeah, no, 100%, 100%. You got to do what's in your best interest, HD. So, no, thank you so much. I definitely, what we were also talking more about, the GovTech. Yeah, GovTech is really, really good for people who just honestly don't want to move around too much in their career. I'm not going to lie. I do okay in high stress level situations. So I'm okay with bouncing from one company to another if it means I can get a higher pay raise and then, you know, use that money, save and stack that money as well. But if you're somebody who just wants a more linear life and you just want to, you know, work at that same company for next 40, 50 years and then, you know, retire, great. That's a good choice for you. But if you're somebody who's like me, I get bored pretty fast, HD. So I got to move around like I move around a lot. So if you're somebody who wants to move that, then that GovTech contracting positions will be the best positions for you.
Yeah, like for real, like that's kind of not necessarily move around. I'd go for other reasons, which is like something I quit on the episode this past weekend. We kind of talked about those different reasons, but also just you want to have a strategy for your career, knowing what your strengths are, knowing what you value in a role. And even here, it's like a free game. It's kind of like some of these companies, they'll give you one-on-ones. So you want to just be mindful of what you're talking about in your one-on-ones to see if it's aligning with your career goals. And even if your manager is asking you, hey, what do you want for your career? They're never asking you that. And, you know, it may just be a customary one-on-one. It means your career may or may not even go the way you want it to at that particular company. So you always got to take your career in the reins. Like, you have to be a free agent for yourself always and just look out for yourself.
Yes,
and it's totally fine. It's totally fine. It's a different age. There are not any really too many companies that are giving people pensions to where you're staying here 10, 15, 20, 25 years. And hey, you know, you're going to get that same salary in 20 years if you stay here. That's not a lot of that. It's not happening anymore. So that's why you see people moving around.
I actually haven't seen a company do that in a minute. Probably government and educational settings. Probably
government, city workers, state workers, like roles like that. But other than that, you're not going to see a lot of it. Now, I've talked to companies where they have 401k and like retirement plans for you, as far as like different things that they invest, like they give you if the longer you stay at the company. So those are things that people tend to start caring about when they get older, when they get a family. But if you can find you a sweet deal before then, I think that's key.
So be honest with you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No.
Now, be honest with you, I kind of don't believe in retirement anymore just because of how inflation is. I tell people all the time, that's why you just got to make sure you enjoy what you're doing and make sure that you make good money with it as well. Because, like, I realized HD, especially with me, I just can't do the same. So I'm not a person who can do the same routine every single day. Like, I have to, like, move around just a little bit. So I tell people all the time, like, there's actually nothing wrong with moving careers, but don't do it too often, right? Don't do, like, every 2 months and you're moving to a new position. But there's nothing wrong with trying to, like, do something different in your life, you know? At the end of the day, we're all going to get old. We're going to come to realize that shoulda, coulda, woulda. And, you know, when you ask those three questions to yourself, you're going to ask, hey, what should I have done? What could I have done? And what would I have done, you know, when I was younger? And and that's why I tell people all the time, when you're planning for your career, think about yourself and, like, in the future self. Like, what would you tell your younger self if you were younger? Oh, V, what would you do when you were younger? And to start backtracking like that, because it definitely helps you see the bigger picture, you know?
Yeah, but I also think you feel that way in a sense because I don't think some people truly retire. I think some people will retire from, like, corporate, but probably still have their own things going on where they do, like, some type of work. But I think you just also feel like that because you're younger. But
yeah, probably.
But for most people, like, if they're your age or a little younger, like, if you can make a lot of money but keep your expenses relatively low and invest well, then you'll be more on track than other people. And so to where when you get, you know, in your 40s, 50s, 60s, you did good enough to where you say, you know what, I've been here, whatever I did, I invested in this, I maxed out my 401k, I put this in my Roth, I did this and that. I've decided another other key is like, hey, if you can, continue to keep on trying to increase what you make versus what you spend. So when you can do that, then that's better. You don't want to become a victim of lifestyle creep. I did a video on that a couple of years ago. It's like, hey, yeah, that's a big one. A lot of people will, you know, you'll go and get, I get it. There's something else that I talked about in the podcast episode that I recorded last week. It's like how some people will, let's say you make $30,000, but they're not managing the $30,000 well, but they want to make, you know, $100,000, $150,000. And they're wondering, like, well, why can't I get it? It's just not your time. You're not ready for it. Or you have people who go from the $30,000 to $70,000 to $100,000. And then now because they got the money, oh, I got to go get the fly's whip. I got to go get the nicest apartment. And so now,
bro,
could buy the stuff, but it still feel like you're making $30,000 because you are living, you're not necessarily living above your means, but you are buying stuff you don't really need. So it's not even
exactly.
Like.
Exactly. And I feel the same way, like, especially with me. Like, now I'm transitioning back into EdTech. Like, if I made sure I lived in a modest, you know, apartment where I have a good roommate, I'm single. So, like, I keep my expenses very, very low. You know what I mean? And I could have, honestly, with the salary, like, I could have really, like, got, like, a penthouse, you know, in, like, Baltimore or Maryland and still been good. But it's like when you put your money into those things, at the end, it's like that's the money that's dragging you down. And you're just wondering why my paychecks are very low. And that's what I tell people all the time. Lifestyle creep is really, really real. But you gotta once you recognize it, that the lifestyle creep is happening, you gotta realize how to put an end to it.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think like now people probably gonna watch this like weird. There's the difference between lifestyle creep and inflation. Now, inflation is stuff that you can't escape.
Oh, yeah. You can't control.
Utilities, some of that stuff, housing prices. Now, sometimes on the rent prices, like if you are single, you got to look at it. It's like, okay, do I need this much? Do I need to spend this $1,500 or can I go find something for $1,200,000?
Yeah.
A smaller square footage because it's just me. Like, those are things you just take into consideration because I'm telling you, one day it's going to pay off. Like, I used to always just so find me a deal. I was a king for finding a deal in a spot that I wanted to stay in. And that's what I do because out here, and of course, I don't know much about like the apartments and housing situation in Baltimore, but out here, there's so many different apartments in so many different areas. If you just keep looking for a while, it's either a new apartment place being built or someplace that got a sweet deal going on, you'll find a good deal and go with that move versus just going with the first thing you see.
Oh, yeah.
Location. If you got to commute a little bit, by all means, it's cool. Like, it's all that other stuff. But
yeah,
let's quickly talk about your company.
Yeah. So, my company, Jumpstart to Tech. So, like I said before, we help develop step-by-step personalized roadmaps to jumpstart individual careers in tech. So, the reason why this is important is because a lot of people feel lost in tech. The real question, HD, is how do you even get started in tech? So we're building these very, very, very detailed roadmaps that help them really get started in tech. It includes a skill development plan, which comes with specific courses for them to take. We actually had them take a personality assessment. Within that personality assessment, we automatically eliminate the job roles that won't suit them based on their personality assessment. And then we list very specific entry-level positions for them to apply for. We list out specific certifications for them to do, specific projects that are actually tailored to specific job roles. So we're not talking about projects that you're doing in college. I'm not saying that's bad, but like we're talking about projects that are tailored to those job roles that gives you that leverage. We list the mid-level job roles. We have we help them with resume building, interview prep, job preparation, and placement. Then we have the long-term career targets.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
Like I said, like just in the last 2 months, we helped 4 people land internships and 2 people land jobs. And it's been going really well because I thought my business, HD, would be in the U.S., but I've actually expanded to Canada. Like yesterday and today, my new clients are from Canada. Got a couple from U.K., it's a big thing because it's just that everybody's lost, man. Nobody really knows how to like really get started. That's why we have you as a career coach, you know, because you understand the pinpoint. Like they don't know how to get started, and just spending all this money on a degree. And I'm not saying a degree is bad. I had some valuable experiences with my degree as well, but I feel as though when you spend so much money on your degree, but you're not backing it up with actual work experience, you're going to end up in a drought that's going to pull you down instead of pulling you up, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I know, like, I think I was, like, not impressed, but the word I'm looking for, I guess, grateful or taken aback. I don't know really what word I want to use right now because it's getting later into the night. Mm-hmm. But when I had my first, I know back in 2021, I had meetings with people in Canada, and I was shocked about that. Like, people was rocking with me in Canada.
Yeah.
Earlier this year, I had did a consultation with a woman in the UK, and I was just shocked.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like you said,
like, when I started my company, that my second client was from UK. I was like, what? Like, you would think like it would all be in Maryland, it would come in Maryland, but nah, it expanded and honestly, HD, like, my clientele base is really on LinkedIn. Like, I like Instagram. I like X. I like TikTok. But the reason why I like LinkedIn the most is because Instagram and these other social medias, it just starts to become a bit toxic. And LinkedIn does become toxic too, but just the way that LinkedIn is set up, it actually motivates you to keep going with your career, you know? So, but when you're on Instagram all day, you're just doom scrolling, watching videos and stuff. So I find LinkedIn the best target audience for me, but I do agree with you. Like, I definitely think that you can find your target audience anywhere. I know Instagram is a really, really great platform. Do you also promote on there as well?
I promote Instagram, YouTube, community posts, X, Threads, my newsletter. I promote everywhere. Facebook. Well, I don't really promote per se in Facebook, but it's more so like I'll share my videos out, which will have.
This could be a conversation we can have after it. You post your post separately, or like you have like an app that can just post it all at once?
I use Buffer.
Oh, you know about Buffer too. Okay. I just started using Buffer. Is Buffer good?
Yeah, Buffer's cool. I've used Social Bee in the past. I've used Radar.
Yeah, you got the free version or you paid for the Buffer?
Paid for it. Okay. I have LinkedIn, Threads, X, and
did you find it useful using Buffer?
Yeah, because I could, you know, for LinkedIn, for example, I could put my post and then I could put whatever I want my first comment to be. Because, you know, sometimes when you put that link, it's going to make it a Buffer link or whatever. So in your comment, you can put whatever.
Yeah, we're going to have a talk afterwards.
Yeah, so I like using Buffer. You know, it helps me out. It gives me analytics and things of that nature. So sometimes if I don't want to go in every individual app, then that's what I'll do. So like if I want to post Reels, like I'll Reels, TikToks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I have TikTok on my Buffer too. So I can post like on my video content at once, like which helps me out without having to spend time going into individual applications.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I know you could agree with me as well. Like the way that everything is set up right now, it's really hard in the job market right now, and it makes it even harder when you don't even have a plan. Like you're just going through every day, and that's what I thought. The biggest thing about this roadmap is it saves you time. It saves you from having to ask 16 to 18 other people about advice, and then you're only getting advice from their experience. But when you're going to somebody like you or me, we're specializing in this, right? So we're actually studying this. Like we have research and insights onto what role would best suit you. But if you're gonna go to 18 other people, they're just gonna give you advice from their experience. So then you're looking back at it, you're like, okay, why isn't this working with me? It's because the advice that they give you was based on their experience. It's not based on your experience. So I agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. And then I was going to tell you about another site that I found out about 4 years ago. It's called AppSumo. 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 Has like a lot of cheap softwares and stuff that you can use for your company and business, stuff like that.
Okay. So, sounds good. I would do that. Yeah, no, definitely, man. It was a great conversation, you know. Like I said, we can like talk about a few more things if you'd like. I want to know, you know, what's on your mind.
I wanted to ask you, I guess, are there any roles that you specialize in helping people get? Like for me,
yes. Go ahead.
I'm saying for me, I specialize more so in like blue team type of roles, SOC, IR. That's kind of like my specialty, but I can help you across the whole thing because the strategy don't change based on what the role is. But for you, do you have anything that you like specialize in, like with people that come to you?
Yeah, so mine is a bit different. So this is what a win to me looks like. If a person gets a certification, right? Person gets a certification, a person gets an internship, a person gets a job placement. I have helped people in the cybersecurity pathway the most. That's our most popular pathway. Cybersecurity is always going to be the most popular pathway. But I've helped people in cybersecurity land cybersecurity analyst roles. So more of those analysts and SOC analyst roles. That's what I do as well. But like I said, the way that the roadmaps are set up, it's set up across all the whole domain within cybersecurity. But my clients seeing their first success is within those entry-level positions like cybersecurity analysts and SOC analyst positions. Like I said, I just recently founded this company just this February. So it's fairly new. So we're still building out the platform. I'm trying to get more people into other roles than that as well. But I built roadmaps for people who want to get into penetration testing as well. But he's also working on that roadmap to land a entry-level position within that. But the most success where people have seen results is within that cybersecurity analyst and SOC analyst positions.
Okay, cool. So yeah, you'll be pretty much up my alley when it comes to specialization. So that's pretty cool. So I would say, and it's probably going to put you on the spot. Mm-hmm. Two things. I like to ask these things. What's one question I didn't ask you that you wish I would have asked you?
Is this like an on-the-spot question? I really don't.
It's always a good question I like to ask. Sometimes when I have guests, they'll have in their mind, like, I'm surprised you didn't ask me this.
Oh, I guess a question that I had is why would you ever leave tech and do something else?
When you say tech, you mean what, like the industry? Like
would I ever move into a different field, like law, or wanted to become a doctor? Because like I'm still in my younger age, so I can probably make that switch if I really wanted to. But would I ever leave tech to do something else?
Well, would you?
Honestly, the answer is no, because tech isn't everything that we do. But if I was to leave to do something else, I probably would. What would I do if I was to not be in tech? I'm trying to figure that out. Of course, entrepreneurship. But so when I was 17, I had a clothing company. I went to DC Fashion Week. So I actually didn't even bring that part up. Saved up enough money to move out of my parents' house, and that's how I started my entrepreneur journey. So it actually didn't even start with tech. I didn't even bring that part up. I actually started at 17 when I had a clothing company. I was hustling, trying to make some money during COVID time to move out of my parents' house. So I probably will go back to fashion designing again. I love fashion. It's a way of like, I see you got that dope shirt on. I know you like fashion too.
To be honest, I just get stuff because I know I pod, and I try to something different like every time that I'm on camera.
But I would definitely go back into fashion. Fashion is really, really important to me because it's a way of expressing yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Expressing yourself. Like right now, I got my Jumpstart Detect shirt on, but like I can like on another part two podcast, I can show people like the type of the designs that I put on shirts. I found fashion very, very, very relaxing for me because of how my brain operates. It's a way of expressing yourself, you know? So I would go back to doing fashion if it was anything else outside of tech.
That's cool. That reminds me of like the reason why of course I like content creation. Like even the editing part to me is soothing and the expression.
Oh man. You know, honestly, that's the one thing I don't like. I don't suck at content creation, but the process just takes a while. But I may have to ask you advice off camera on like how to actually like get better with content creation, because I don't know. Like, do you have to make it very HD quality, or can you just make it something chill? You know.
So in short, I record like right now. I'm recording this in 4K, but I'm an exporter in HD. So the higher the quality you record in, the better. You can always lower it when you like export it, especially if you're going to post something on like LinkedIn or Instagram or TikTok. Like it doesn't have videos in 4K. So exporting them at 1080 is perfect. So it's really just more about learning about lighting, cameras, mics, sound, all these different things that I've learned all over the years. You know, like I've recently just been putting adding to my descriptions, hey, podcast produced by me, because I forget, like I produced over hundreds of episodes and hundreds of videos. And I forget to say that because like anytime somebody's looking like, yo, who produces the show? Like people ask me like, yo, are you doing these ad integrations and stuff like that? It's like, yeah, I'm doing everything. I'm about to transition out of doing that because I like doing it, but it does take up a lot of my time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. And I do want to ask you a question as well. We talked about this off camera. You talked a lot about why people should follow their passions. and why, you know, chasing money is one thing in tech. Like, you want to make that money. Cause you're talking about blue collar jobs and stuff. And this was before. And I don't want for my audience to know, like, do you believe making a very high salary in tech is the only thing that will bring you happiness? Cause I've seen people who work for Google, bro, their hours, but they can't even see their families when they come home. They're working 12 hour shifts every day, and it's just like, does that really bring happiness? You know what I mean?
So I don't necessarily agree with people to chase their passions, at least in the beginning. You need mm-hmm. to chase money in a sense, at least take care yes. of your necessities.
Yeah.
But once you get up to a part to where maybe your passions can pay for your basic necessities, then do that. Because just chasing the money, you'll keep on chasing the money, but it's not gonna make you happy. It's not gonna make that girl you want stay with you. It might, you know, you might be able to take her to dinner. It might get you that car, but then you'll just have all these tangible things, like, you know, what I have. Like, true happiness is intrinsic. It comes from in here, and it's gonna be little things that you do that make you happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like we were talking about my I quit video, for those of you who don't know, and I'll probably try to put it like in the card right here, but I made a I quit video a couple of years ago. Well, really almost 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the video says, hey, I quit my $175,000 cybersecurity job. I've had people ask me all questions like, oh, how much was that base and bonus? I was getting like $155 base, and like, it was like a $20,000 bonus. But so all in all, that's the compensation. But
you say you quit it?
I didn't quit. I resigned because I already had another job. More like I just quit cold turkey.
Oh, okay. So you felt as though the job wasn't for you?
Pretty much, yeah. And what most people don't know is a lot of companies will not let you switch roles within a year. So I was down to stay there because I tried to go to the threat modeling team, and the manager was like, yo, I wanted to get you, for lack of better words, but they said you got to be in this role 6 months to a year. So I've been through that before. I know how that goes. You wait a year, and now they don't have any recs open on the team. So now you wasted a year of getting better at something that you were typically good at, that you regressed in skill set. And now you're even more mad that you wasted a year. Yeah, you're making the money, but it's not amounting to anything because, you know, you are dragging yourself to work. It's something you're doing. You're on calls. Like I was telling my friend yesterday, like I was on the calls with this thing I was doing projects for that I tried to make myself interested in, and I couldn't. I was always like, I cannot wait till I get off this call. And so when you feel like that, yeah, like if you don't have any other options, by all means, yes. But when you feel like that, it does initially take a toll on your mental, and you start showing it in different ways around your house, whatever. And that's not really a way you want to be. And it's one of the things I realized, like in dealings with grownups as a child or a teenager or whatever, realizing, hey, a lot of them weren't really mad at me or whatever. Their situations is what had them upset. So in short, if you got the skills, you can always find something that lines up, that pays you what you need to get, at least to take care of your family. And then there could be other ways to, you know, subsidize whatever you're looking for.
Like, I would say, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
No, I was saying, like, you can also do 1099 work. I'm not sure if my audience knows about what that actually means. I do want to, like, give a very quick brief summary of what that is. So you can work a full-time job to develop a specific niche within your full-time job, and then use that specific niche to get a 1099 role and doing part-time roles and get paid. Let's say a person makes a 12-month salary, you can get their 6 month salary within a three month duration. Of course, that's just me spitting numbers out there. Not all true, but let's just say that's one thing I did really well with HD is like I mastered, like, not mastered, but I did really good at teaching. I was able to use those teaching to get those side gigs as well. So I let my audience know, like, there are so many different ways to make money. But just make sure that you put yourself out there, because I tell people all the time that you got to make sure you put yourself out there.
Nah, that's facts. All right. So what are three things you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah. So three things I want to leave with the audience with is that fail fast. The reason why I say fail fast is because I'm 24. I grew so fast in my career. Made a lot of mistakes in my career as well. And to be honest, I made the mistakes, but do I regret it? I do regret it at times, right? It's supposed to regret it. But at least learn from your mistakes. You know what I mean? So learn from your mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. We're all humans, you know? We're not robots. We're not meant to go to a, we're not meant to go anywhere and just sit at a desk and then, you know, not make any mistakes. So it's okay to make mistakes. Learn from your mistakes and fail fast while you're young. And second thing I want to give my audience is control your thoughts. I know the things I'm about to say is a little bit different, but I'm a very spiritual person, HD. So like I'm so focused on like maintaining peace in my life. And I think, you know, controlling your thoughts is really, really important, because every day they say there's like 10,000 thoughts that is running through a person's brain as from the moment they wake up, from the moment they sleep. So making sure that you control your thoughts and you align your thoughts with your goals and your passions in life. Because one thing is, your thoughts can literally destroy you or they can uplift you. So if you're always thinking on the negative side, like be like this, like wake up next time when you wake up in the morning, go into the mirror and be like, today's going to be a good day. Guarantee you will have a good day. Because I tell people all the time, when you wake up and you're already in a grumpy mood, your day is already going to go, it's going to go sideways because you're in a grumpy mood. The third thing I want to say is stop overthinking and stop second guessing. One thing a lot of people do is they waste a lot of time. Let me tell you how much time is wasted every day trying to figure it out. Stop figuring it out. Just do it. Like, literally stop second guessing. Stop overthinking if I should do it. Just do it. If you fail, you learn from it, and now you move forward. So, you know, those are the last things I want to say. And I will say, for everybody, for my audience here, I will be giving you guys 10% off all of my plans on my roadmap. Just want to help out the community as well. And also, I will be partnering with HD in the near future. We have to talk about it, but I do want to bring in my clients to, you know, get coaching from HD and really, really get that one-on-one support that they need from somebody who's in this field working on it. So I definitely want to, you know, thank you so much for, you know, really having me on your podcast. I really enjoyed this, just genuine and natural flowing conversations. I tell people all the time, because I do podcasts, like, you don't got to always have like a 21 question questionnaire and try to, like, I enjoy like the simple, genuine, natural conversations. I think that's what the audience wants the most. You know, they want something where they can just feel the naturalness, you know? They want the natural out of it. So thank you so much.
Nah, man, you're more than welcome. And when you said about the thought process thing, I went to one of my favorite quotes, "I Think Therefore I Am" by Rene Descartes. Mm-hmm. It's just one of the things, you got to see yourself as whatever you're trying to do, and eventually it'll come through. Mm-hmm.
So. And yeah, I want to leave with one quote as well, since you said, well, we go back to back. But one quote I have in mind is, an idol's mind is the devil's playground. Meaning that the more you just sit there and you're not doing anything, that's the devil's playground. It's going to be playing with your head. So make sure to keep yourself busy. I'm not saying you got to burn out, but know the time to chill, but make sure to keep yourself busy so your mind is not always racing with thoughts. So,
yeah, no, I agree. That's definitely one of the reasons why I keep myself busy. You keep yourself busy, you stay out of more trouble.
Yeah, and are you also all the time, like, so you wake up, I'm sure you wake up like pretty early, and then you working all the way up to 10. I know you got a family as well. Do you have like a rest break as well?
No, I'm not waking up when I wake up in the morning. It's kind of like getting my kids to school and stuff. Like, everything typically starts for business stuff by like after 11. So either somebody books something at 11 or it's after that. So it's going to be 11 till then. It's not in the morning till like whatever time. So it can fluctuate. Then, you know, that's a good point about entrepreneurship. You can make whatever hours you want to.
Yeah, I know. It don't got to be very linear. No, thank you so much, HD, for having me on the podcast. I'll also be putting this episode, whenever you upload it, I'm going to put this on my podcast as well, so my audience can hear it as well and throw it on my YouTube as well. So
cool, man. And I guess y'all know what to do. And I was about to forget this, but Vinod, where can they keep tabs on you at? What platforms?
Yes. So I'm on LinkedIn, Vinod Akinduri. I will send it to you as well. And jumpstart2tech.com. I try to keep it simple. I don't give too many. Like, I know people give like 18 different social handles. I just keep it very simple. Jumpstart, JUMPSTART, the number 2, tech.com. And you can find me at Vinod.Kanuri, or you can search up Jumpstart to Tech to also find me on LinkedIn as well. Like I said, please feel free to reach out, connect with me. Let's have a good conversation on how, you know, we can benefit you in your career. And HD, once again, man, I also really, you know, just want to thank you again for having me. You took the time today. It's 9:47 p.m. where I am, so I know it's very late. So thank you so much for taking that time to really have me on your podcast. It's an honor to be on your podcast. Thank you so much.
Man, I appreciate the conversation. But as we always say, until next time, let's stay textual, and we are out. Peace.